516-620-3602. Coming up next, Bike Snob with Evan Weiss.
Monkey Face. Hello, you're listening to Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm Eben Weiss. This past Wednesday, during a press conference, Mayor Bill de Blasio shocked bicycle advocates in New York City and beyond when he told reporters his administration was considering requiring city bike riders to wear helmets. De Blasio said this during an exchange with CBS2 reporter Marcia Kramer, who is a known bike hater famous for a 2011 story in which she suggested that terrorists on bikes might use the Second Avenue bike lane to blow up the Israeli consulate. Kramer generally asks de Blasio ridiculous loaded questions about bikes, and according to Gothamist, this time Kramer asked de Blasio if city bike riders should be made to wear helmets. Quote, given the fact that there have been a lot of bicycle deaths. So apparently to this, Bill de Blasio replied, quote, I have thought about that, and that's something we are taking, that is something we are talking about inside the administration. There are different viewpoints on what would work and how much impact it would have, but I think it's a real valid issue, so it's something we are studying right now. Furthermore, later in the press conference, a reporter asked de Blasio if he'd considered requiring bicyclists to have licenses, to which he replied, I have not, but I think it's also a valid discussion. Bike advocates were stunned and infuriated that de Blasio, in an exchange with Marcia Kramer, no less, would suggest that mandatory helmets or any of this stuff is, quote, valid. In 2019, saying that people should be made to wear bicycle helmets or made to have a license in order to ride a bicycle is sort of the transit policy equivalent of saying the earth is flat. However, if you don't ride a bike or you're not immersed in bicycle advocacy and policy and so forth, you may be wondering what the big deal is. I mean, we all want people to be safe out there, right? So to help explain, I have a special guest today, Charles Komanoff. We're going to be taking calls today, 212-209-2877 is going to be the number to call. My guest, Charles Komanoff, is a, here's a very abridged version of his bio, which I've adapted from his website. And Charles, please feel free to interrupt me if you want to correct something or add something or anything like that, okay? Here we go. Charles Komanoff is widely known for his work as an energy policy analyst, transport economist, and environmental activist in New York City. Komanoff was a prime mover in the campaign that passed a congestion pricing plan for New York City, both as creator of the spreadsheet model used by the state government and transit advocates to evaluate different toll plans, and as a proponent of balancing transit investment with traffic pricing. He also directs the Carbon Tax Center, a clearinghouse for information, research, and advocacy on behalf of robust and transparent carbon emissions pricing to address the climate crisis. Okay, so I can sit here and tell you why mandatory helmets are bad, but as you can see, Charles is a smart guy who went to Harvard, and he can tell you with facts and numbers and spreadsheets and all the rest of that stuff why mandatory helmets are bad. So thank you very much, Charles, for coming on the show with me today.
Hey, Evan, how are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you? I want to ask you, maybe this isn't quite relevant, but I know you did the New York City Century yesterday, 100-mile ride. How are you feeling?
Accomplished. Happy. It'll probably be my last century ride of any type, because I'm in my eighth decade now, and it just
wow,
it gets harder. But I gotta say that there were more beautiful bike paths than I'd seen, you know, the last time. The spirit of the riders was great, and I'm pretty psyched. I got to get further from the mic.
Oh, we got a high five here for the century completion.
Okay, yeah. All right. Sorry, Michael. let's get to it.
Yeah, let's get to it. So de Blasio is indicating that the administration is possibly looking at a helmet law that would apply to city bikers. Again, I want to remind everybody, 212-209-2877. Please join the conversation. So what's wrong with helmet laws?
Three main things, although let's sort of step back a little bit and talk about what's so dispiriting about de Blasio's off-the-cuff response to Marsha Kramer last week. Part of the collateral damage of bicycling not being taken seriously in the United States is that people outside of the bike community, as you just alluded to, don't understand that there is a huge body of really excellent research. Some of it is sociological, some is epidemiological. A lot of it is just from transport economists and city planners, you know, et cetera, that has looked into almost every issue involving bicycling over a long period of time. And there are three things that they have come to understand. I mean, there's 100, but there's three that are pertinent right here. One is that cycling is a fantastic thing for society and for individuals, including the physical and emotional and cognitive health of people who get to cycle. 25 years ago, there was a study published in British Medical Journal that showed that even in the dangerous or unfriendly bicycle climate in the United Kingdom at that time, that the actuarial benefits of cycling in terms of extending your lifespan, because you'd have better heart function, better lung function, a better feeling about your day and your community, and a higher cognitive function, that those benefits outweigh the actuarial risk of being fatally injured in a cycling crash by about 20 to 1. So that anything that discourages cycling, whether it's the cruelty of the NYPD or the lack of proactive policy by the city of New York under Mayor de Blasio, who of course controls or would control the NYPD if he bothered to, or the possibility of compulsory helmet laws, it precludes individuals from reaping those benefits to their longevity. Second is this phenomenon of safety in numbers, which I'm happy to say I had a minor role in helping Peter Jacobson of the state of California quantify back in the 1990s, and it shows, and there are curves, statistical curves that bear this out pretty well, that the more cycling there is in a city or in a domain, the safer each individual cyclist is, and that makes sense because drivers, whether they want to or not, or whether they're conscious of it or not, the more cyclists that they see on the road, the more they internalize the idea that bicyclists are not a random or rare part of the road ecology, but are something that they need to be aware of and look out for and adapt to. And this safety in numbers phenomenon basically says that is if you can double the amount of cycling in a city, let's say, that the chance that an individual cyclist is going to be seriously injured in a crash with a driver goes down by about one third. So what really keeps cycling and cyclists safe, say in New York City, is not the NYPD, which could care less, but the presence of many other cyclists, which changes the ecology of the road environment and changes driver perception. And then the third thing that has come to be understood, although this is less widely recognized than it should be, is that the benefit of helmets in terms of reducing the chances of a serious injury or fatality to a cyclist were badly overstated in the original research in the 1980s. And the researchers at Harborview medical facility in Seattle who did that early research. 10 years later, in the late 90s, they went back and reevaluated that, and they threw in more variables of the age of the cyclist, the socioeconomic status, drunk or not, all kinds of variables, and they basically concluded that at best you could say that wearing a helmet reduces the individual cyclist's chances of being seriously injured in a crash by only 10%. Now, 10% ain't nothing, although that wasn't even statistically significant. It was just barely worth talking about, and they made this clear in their paper. But what it means is that if mandatory helmet wearing reduces even modestly the amount of cycling that goes on, as people get afraid that the NYPD is going to ticket them, or that the sanction against cycling bareheaded is going to be too great for them to withstand, then that takes away the safety in numbers benefit, and it's more likely the compulsory helmet law to increase cycling injuries and the propensity of crashes with drivers than to decrease them. And all you have to do is go around the world and look and compare countries that have compulsory helmet wearing, like Australia, which saw an increase in cycling fatalities per cyclist once they put in that law 1 or 2 decades ago, and compare that to all of the societies in Northern Europe, the cycling utopias of Denmark, Netherlands, and Germany, that not only don't have helmet laws, they have very few helmets, and at the same time, they have very low rates of cycling fatalities. So only a fanatic somebody who's ignorant or doesn't care to be informed about the science would have answered the way the mayor did to Marsha Kramer's question last week. And what he should have said is that, no, this is not up for consideration because the science is clear that compulsory helmet wearing is bad for the individual cyclist, it's bad for the volume of cycling, and it's bad for New York City.
Okay, so there you have it. You can call in at 212-209-2877 to join this conversation with Charles Komenoff about mandatory helmet laws, the specter of which has raised its helmeted head last week since Mayor de Blasio mentioned in a press conference that his administration was considering making city bike riders specifically wear bicycle helmets. Now, two things that leap to mind. First of all, you said, I think, Charles, that anybody who would endorse or suggest that bicyclists be made to wear helmets would have to be, what did you say, either ignorant or what was your other word?
Who knows at this point, but just...
That you would have to be actively trying to...
Antagonistic, I think, maybe. No, I think it's more that you're caught up in this unspoken idea that cycling is... Not just for children, but that it's not worthy of scientific and serious investigation. So you have to ignore a fairly large body of expert opinion that has conclusively rejected the idea of compulsory helmets.
Right, and it's really alarming. Most of us would agree that the mayor presiding over what some might argue we're the most progressive cycling city in the country. It's a kind of a low bar, but we have the biggest bicycle network. We have all of this stuff. We have a Vision Zero program that the mayor is ostensibly committed to, and it's kind of shocking then that he would even offhandedly give any credence to this completely unscientific attitude that may be making people wear bike helmets is safer. And I think what's really alarming about it to me, and Charles, you could tell me if you agree, disagree, he said it specifically with regard to city bikes. And it seems to me, as I understand it, that helmet laws are especially terrible for bike share, no?
Yeah, Seattle's bike share program fell apart 4 or 5 years ago because it had a helmet requirement, and it just proved too onerous for people to bring their own helmet or to sort of rent, a helmet that had just been used by somebody else. So there too, that's also part of the science. And it, you know, the other thing that's so discouraging about this is that, as you've, you know, been talking about on your show, and everybody in the cycling community understands, is that this year is proving to be a hellscape for cyclists in New York City in terms of the amount of fatalities. And just this morning, as I was leaving my apartment, had my bike, you know, ready to go out, my upstairs neighbor, you know, in the elevator, expressed her admiration for me for cycling. You know, you must be so brave, and pointed out that she's afraid to cycle in the city. And I had no answer for her.
Yeah,
I wish I could have said, well, the perception, I understand, but it's actually not so bad. Well, this year it is really bad, and the mayor, you know, you and your articles, even, and me too, and you know, my articles. Everybody, Streets Blog, TransAlt, we've all been clamoring for the mayor to do something, and there is a really long list of things that he could do if he cared about it. And so instead, he picks up this idiotic meme of compulsory helmets.
Yeah, and there's a lot he could do, and this ain't it. So we're going to be taking calls, 212-209-2877. I just want to say very quickly, we mentioned bike share. Seattle's bike share system. Melbourne, just in Australia, just ended its bike share program. A lot of people are suggesting that their helmet law has made it not tenable.
Right, and then we have the good news that here in our city, last week, City Bike reached a new record of 90,000 rides on a single day. And that even in the face of all of the scary news about cycling fatality. So the latent and beginning to be actualized desire to be cycling in the city, which, you know, I have been fighting for since the 80s, and so many of us are seeking, you know, it's there, and we simply await a political system. There, we certainly have a lot of allies on the city council, but we now have to wait almost 28 months for a mayor who's going to get this.
Yeah, it's a stick in the spokes, this helmet stuff. Okay, so number to call is 212-209-2877, WBAI. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Good morning, everybody. I'm in Brooklyn. Good morning, Michael G. and to Evan's guest. I forgot his name.
Charles Komenoff. Thank you.
Hi,
good morning to you.
I've been listening to your show since it went on the air. I used to bike ride to work every day, but I can't anymore. And I want to say that this is not a statement from BAI. This is my own personal statement about the mayor. I have no respect for the man for many reasons, but I know you guys, like, you know, biking is healthy and just as exercise is. I don't disagree with that at all. However, I think generally for your show, you need to understand that to compare New York City bikers with Australia or Denmark or any other country or city that there are a lot of bikers is not fair, because the setup and the design in those cities or countries is not at all like New York City. That's the first point. The second point is that I have known 5 cyclists who have died because they did not wear helmets. And they were both city bikers and, you know, their own private bicyclers. So that's just something I want to throw out to the air for the other listeners to hear as well. The third thing I want to say is that cyclists, whichever word you want to use, are required by law to follow the same, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was riding my bike to work every day for several years, I understood that cyclists had to follow the same traffic laws as vehicles, no matter what kind of vehicles they were. So I have been hit, mowed down by cyclists who are not following traffic rules. One time I was hit down walking with my cane. Now, I respect bikes, but just like cars and trucks and all the other vehicles, they too must learn to respect and face consequences if they injure people. On that note, since you're about to interrupt me, I'll interrupt myself and say thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, with regard to the third point of traffic laws, yes, I mean, without getting into the nitty gritty, yes, bicyclists are supposed to obey the law like drivers. Sometimes they do not. I'm going to let Charles address some of these questions if he is so inclined. The other two issues, Charles. So she says she knows 5 cyclists who have been killed because they weren't wearing helmets. Now, this is this is there's a lot of certainty in her statement. This is warranted.
Yeah, that's the first of the two city bike riders who've died on our streets here was Dan Hanigby, who was killed maybe in 2017, crushed by an express bus of some sort that was coming in from Jersey that sideswiped him into a parked car on West 26th Street near 8th Avenue. And I haven't seen, the autopsy or the forensics. And by the way, one thing that should be said that we can all agree on is that one of the ongoing scandals, and this really predates the current mayor, is that the NYPD's Collision Investigation Squad, the supposedly elite team of forensic analysts who come to the site of every fatal crash in the city, whether it's a motorist, motorcyclist, pedestrian, or bicyclist, they do these pretty elaborate, chalk-based reconstructions of the crash, and the public never sees these. Health professionals never see these. Advocates never see these. City council members never see these. So there's a huge trove of research that might help us understand what went wrong and what, say, cyclists could have done to protect themselves. Well, we don't know that. But I have to really be skeptical of the idea that Dan Hanigby would be alive today if he'd been wearing a helmet. His body was pretty badly crushed. I don't know about the other city biker. But, on the general, it's really sad, I have to say. And I'm sorry for, the fear and worse that may happen to you on the streets now that you're walking more than you're cycling. I got into bike advocacy in 1986 out of a desire to create common cause between pedestrians and bike riders. And to some extent, I think, we've succeeded. The Livable Streets movement has created great alliances between pedestrians and cyclists, between transit users and others. What we're all trying to do is reduce the amount of cars in the city, the amount of driving in the city, and what Corey Johnson, the Speaker of the City Council, refers to as we're trying to break car culture. And that's what we should be doing. We should stop fighting among ourselves. And the issue of whether a cyclist, when it's 15 degrees out in winter and is stopped at a T intersection for a red light that's going to last for another 54 seconds because she just missed the light, whether she should stand there and freeze and maybe, be subject to some other person on the road doing violence to her, and also miss the chance to maintain her momentum and get a little bit of clear space before the cars come rushing past her once again. Let's stop arguing about that, and let's really join together and break the car culture, reduce the amount of driving, and make a city that is safer and works for everyone.
All right. And, and the caller also mentioned, the old, we've heard this 1,000 times, this isn't Amsterdam, this isn't such and such a place, New York City's different. Amsterdam wasn't Amsterdam either. In the 1970s, they had gone in a car-centric direction. They decided that they didn't like this car-centric direction. They were unwilling to accept the death toll, particularly to children. They made a real concerted effort to change their culture, and they did it. And that's what we're doing here. We're 20, 30, 40 years behind them, but we're doing it. I'm going to take one more call before we take a break. Then when we come back, we'll take more calls. 212-209-2877 is the number. WBAI, you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Janine from Brooklyn.
Hi, Janine.
Hi. Okay, so I am four, and I'm one that always says to the cops and everything, don't you give tickets. I'm sorry. You have to follow the rules like a car.
Okay, they give, I just want to, they give
car.
Lots of tickets to, I just want to, before we go any further, if you don't ride a bike, they give tickets all day long to bikes.
Okay, and my bike that I want to purchase is a tricycle because I'm petrified to ride a bike in New York.
Okay, there are some good trikes out there.
I spin in my apartment, but I want to ride outside as well.
Yeah.
But again, you must And if it's too cold to be at the red light, then don't be riding the bike.
Okay.
I don't know what to say.
I think, you know, the city. Okay. All right. You know, the city is trying, the city and the people, especially people like Charles, who are pushing for a better cycling city, are trying to create an outside where you will be comfortable not only getting on a bike, but on a bike with two wheels. And that's not to dismiss trikes, which are great things and some people need. You know, that's another interesting thing is people say bikes are ableists. There are bikes, trikes, recumbent bikes. People of all different abilities, ages can ride bikes. We're trying to make a city where you can do that.
I'm in good health.
If it makes you feel right. So you know, we're all trying here to make a city where you don't have to sit in your apartment and look outside and say it's crazy out there. I'm not riding a bike. We want you. You're the most important kind of potential cyclist, a person who would get on a bike if it wasn't for this largely psychological barrier of quite frankly. Terror. It's scary out there. And it's also very easy in the face of that fear that comes from, all the news stories you hear, all the speeding drivers and everything. It is easy to sort of go to the more manageable, more easy. These bikers are crazy and need to be ticketed. They're ticketed like crazy. Charles, you want to add something to that?
No one's crazy. We're not using that word, but we all must respect one another. And if absolutely. I have to stop as a car, and let me tell you something, I'm one of those bikers as well, nicely, I would say, you're doing something wrong. You're coming down the wrong way. You didn't stop for the light. I mean, this is who I am. I'm first a mom.
Okay. All right. So go ahead, Charles.
I'm a dad. Eben's a dad. And I love that you want to ride your tricycle. I don't know what's quite stopping you. It sounds like maybe you're scared of cars and trucks, which we all are. And by the way, on the City Century ride, there was a guy in a tricycle and keeping up, you know, with us for the whole 100 miles, which was pretty awesome. But, I've been giving a lot of thought lately to why are some bike advocates like me so strident. I'm strident. Eben, you're not. That's one of the things I love about your show. But I think part of it, it's not just that we love what we do and that we're frustrated that more of us don't do this, what we do. But it's that we see riding in traffic. We see what drivers do every minute of the day. And it's just mind-boggling how thoughtless, reckless, careless, heedless, careless they are. Just parking halfway out from the curb, turning or changing lanes without signaling, weaving around, going too fast or going too slow, not indicating what they're going to do so that we can adapt to them. And it's just sort of staggering. And have I ever seen a driver ticketed for, failure to yield or failure to signal. And meanwhile, I'm lucky. I've only gotten one ticket as a bicyclist in my whole life, and that was during a bicycle demonstration 25 years ago. My wife, who rides to work, just got ticketed a month ago. She was a sitting duck in an NYPD bike sting in the 8th Avenue bike lane because she didn't stop, at a red light, or she stopped and then kept going, before the red light turned to green at a place where there were no pedestrians crossing. So she's out. We're out $190 because she did something that was technically against the law, that was not reckless. And the NYPD instead could have been ticketing drivers who pose a quantum greater threat to all of us than the bike riders do. Let's get our priorities right.
All right. So we're gonna take a break, and when we come back, we'll take more calls. 212-209-2877.
This is Phil Donahue. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
Hi, I'm Michael G. Haskins, host of Living for the City on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM Mondays at 11 a.m. Along with senior producer Jillian Jonas, we delve into some of the complexities of living in one of the most diverse cities in America. From the Bronx, Greenwich Village, and Lower East Side to Sunnyside, we speak with on-the-ground activists who are fighting back against mega developers and too-tall proponents that make the Disneyfication of Times Square look like child's play. We also speak with community leaders and journalists from the Lenape Nation, Black Star News, and the People's Organization for Progress, the underreported stories, hidden histories that so often get overlooked. Living for the City, Mondays at 11 a.m. over listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Hey, this is Shaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Okay, you're back with Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm Eben Weiss. My guest is cycling policy expert Charles Komanoff. We're talking about mandatory bicycle helmet laws, which Mayor Bill de Blasio suggested he might consider for city bike riders last week. Please call in at 212-209-2877. We're taking calls and talking about this. First, very quickly, the way we approach helmets is a really great model for how we approach bicycles and cycling in this country in general, which is to say, we're simplistic, judgmental, and totally black and white about it. There's absolutely no nuance. Helmets have this totemistic power in our culture. We invest this power into them that they really don't have. As Charles mentioned, studies, some of the key studies that you hear quoted, still quoted, some of these figures, they say 80% effective in reducing injuries. These are serious injuries, or however they phrase it. These numbers have been retracted, yet you still hear them. People who hate cyclists are constantly saying they do this, they do that, and they don't wear helmets, as if not wearing a helmet is some sort of a moral failing. Cyclists are sometimes no better, and there are riders who will shame you for not wearing one. But as Charles pointed out, helmets don't make cyclists safer. More cyclists make cyclists safer. This is numbers. This is science. It is science. We're going to take your calls. I just want to, just to sort of prove this and to sort of drill down a little bit onto something Charles brought up earlier, he used the example of other countries to show that what really makes cyclists safer is more cyclists. Okay, so let's look at the Netherlands, the safest country in the world, I believe, to ride a bicycle. The metric, probably the best metric to use, Charles can tell me if he disagrees with me, I would say the best metric to use to determine whether or not a country is safe for cyclists is deaths per mile or kilometer traveled. So the Netherlands has 10.7 cyclists killed per billion kilometers of bicycle traveled. Denmark has 16.6 cyclists killed per billion kilometers of traveled by bike. Here in the USA, we're at 44 cyclists killed per billion kilometers traveled.
Absolutely right. Though that's only half the metric. The other half is that in, say, the Netherlands, fewer people are dying in motor vehicles that are crashing because they're not using motor vehicles nearly as much as we are. So it's not just that more cycling makes cyclists safer. More cycling makes everything safer. It makes transport safer because there are ways to get around other than using this inherently dangerous machine known as an automobile.
Right. I read something. This was, I think, maybe last year. I believe cycling deaths in the Netherlands, in just in raw numbers, were actually greater than motor vehicle deaths in the Netherlands. I think they, for the first time, they more dead cyclists. And in a weird way, that was good news because that just by the sheer volume of cyclists and the sheer amount of kilometers they're pedaling, cycling was still getting safer when you factor that in. Raw numbers don't tell the whole story.
Right, and unseen in any of those numbers is the greater longevity of the Dutch people because so many of them cycle as part of their daily lives, and they do it into their 80s, which
right.
I'm going to be getting close to soon.
We're sitting here. You said you were in your 80s.
No. Hey, I'm in my eighth decade.
You're in your eighth decade. Well, you said that. You're sitting here not believing you, and you know, you just rode 100 miles yesterday, and the reason that we don't believe you is you know, you're out there on the bike, and you know, it's doing what you say it does. It's the health benefits are apparent. So 212-209-2877. We're going to take some calls. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Am I on the air now?
You are, yes.
Oh, terrific. My name is Penelope. I'm from Manhattan on the Upper East Side. Hi. I've lived here for 48 years. I've never told my name in decades. I'm 6 decades and 8 years old.
Ah, okay.
I remember many years ago, you were... I agree with... almost really everything. The cars are more culpable, but the contributory negligence of the cyclists is the e-cycle. I have seen them on different traffic patterns, but I believe that they're under pressure to do their deliveries. We're practically in a Netflix pizza society. People work late and they order out. And, you know, there's a lot of bugs in the carpet, but I think that we really have to reduce the cars. It's obvious a car is much more lethal than a bicycle. I have seen one bicycle accident. I've seen a taxi go into the traffic, and an older lady was walking, and all I saw was a cane going up in the air. But I do believe definitely the cars are way more dangerous, and I really think the pollution level will be lower. And the only rule I think should be changed is that no cyclist should be on the sidewalk.
Okay, yeah, well, that's a rule that doesn't need to be changed because it's there. With regard to that, I would say that you know, I do not condone or anything like that, riding on the sidewalk. I think we have a situation where sometimes it's happening because people on bikes feel they have no choice. They're scared. They're on a street that's inhospitable, and they're doing it. So probably the cure for sidewalk cycling is to make the streets more bikeable so people don't feel compelled to ride on the sidewalk. No one wants to ride on the sidewalk just because. You raise another very interesting point, which is e-bikes, and very interesting that you're very pro bike, but you're saying but the e-bikes, and you know, this is a new thing. This is a very new thing that's coming into the mix, and of course people are gonna have feelings about this. Charles, how do you feel about e-bikes? How do you think they fit into the framework of what we're discussing?
Okay, I'm gonna hang up and listen. I'd love to hear this.
Okay thank
bye.
You. Thank you for bringing that up.
Hi, Penelope. Thanks for those thoughts. There are two kinds of, let's say, assist bikes. There's the electric assist bikes. I guess those are kind of known as e-bikes. And then there are the throttle bikes that are used primarily by delivery workers. And I guess here I'm going to probably take issue with many of my comrades in the cycling community and maybe even in the social justice community. I think there is an inherent problem with the throttle bikes, that they're too fast. And I think that they do create a real risk to others on the street. And are they really necessary when electric assist bikes, which are not as fast, but do provide that extra boost, which I don't at all begrudge people who are working in the delivery industry, who are working hellaciously long hours in tough conditions, having to battle all that car traffic, they need some help. And that extra little boost that the electric motor affords them, which is the same as we have or will have when they come back on the streets, the electric assist city bikes, which I have ridden once. I was in April hopping on a city bike to get from Tribeca, where I live, to Penn Station, so I could take the Long Island Railroad to the AirTrain to fly to the Netherlands, as it happens. And I had all my luggage with me, and I, you know, was kind of, I found an electric assist city bike, and it was responsive, but it didn't seem at all out of control or disproportionate to everybody else on the streets. It enabled me to maintain a speed of sort of 12 or 14 miles an hour, which is just what I wanted in that 8th Avenue bike lane, not too fast for other people on the road that I'm trying to coexist with. But it meant that I didn't have to sweat like crazy while I was hauling 25 pounds of luggage that I had strapped onto this electrified bike. And I'd like to see the food delivery people with those bikes. I'd like to see a City of New York buyback program on the throttle bikes to pay the delivery workers or their restaurant companies for the money that they've invested in them, get them off the streets, replace them with electrified assist bikes, which will be humane and efficient and proportionate and safe.
Okay. Debbie, we're going to take some more calls. 212-209-2877. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Nancy. I live in Manhattan, and I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. So my concern is this. I used to be very pro-bike myself, happy when they started trying to get more bikes, fewer cars in New York City, but I think we've reached, for me anyway, where I live, we reached the point where I no longer feel safe because of bicycles. The thing is, cars, you know, you can predict what direction they're going to be coming from. They don't drive on the sidewalks. They don't come from the wrong way on a one-way street. They don't come north when they're supposed to be coming south, but that's what the bikes do. They're everywhere. And it's I feel like specifically where I live and where I walk my dog in Central Park, I feel like it's a matter of time before we're going to get hit because they're coming from everywhere. And the fact of the matter is, you say, you know, we need to break the car culture and more cyclists make cyclists safer. But I will tell you personally, more cyclists make pedestrians less safe. And I'd like to know, why isn't the cycling community interested in making, in continuing for it to be safe for pedestrians? You talk about we all need to work together. I need to see cyclists remotely concerned about whether or not they're going to hit me or hit my dog. I can't tell you how many people I know personally who've been hit by bikes. I don't know anybody personally who's been hit by a car.
You're lucky there. You know, I would say I'm to be totally honest with you, when your characterization of drivers versus cyclists, and not to get bogged down in a who's worse, but when you say all the things that you listed that you said drivers don't do, and you listed coming the wrong way, coming at what each one of those, I was absolutely stunned to hear, because all maybe you live in a very rarefied and fortunate pocket, but I mean the stuff I see drivers flying, they're coming left and right, backwards, forwards, wrong way on the sidewalk.
But
forget about it.
For the most part, at the very least, there are rules and they know what they are and they know they need to obey them. But the cyclists, honestly, I'm looking the right direction and I'm looking both ways to make sure I have the light before I cross Central Park West. Meanwhile, some bike will come out of the sidewalk going the wrong way. You know, it's just, it's crazy. And I see, by the way, you say people don't ride on the sidewalk except to avoid something. Are you kidding me? On Central Park West, people ride every single day on the sidewalk. There's a bike lane right there. They half the time they don't use it. A lot of times it is the fact that people are riding city bikes, especially as first-time bike users. They barely know how to ride a bike, and they're terrified. Yet they're out there riding the bike.
Well, the terrified is exactly what we were saying, that they're on the sidewalks. And as far as people riding on the sidewalk, there's nobody in the bike community who's going to sit here and tell you people should be allowed to ride on the sidewalk or say it's a good thing. Nobody's for that. What I will say, as far as your points that the cyclists need to think about everybody else, the entire bicycle advocacy movement. I don't think you'll find a group of road users who are more self-regulating and critical of each other's behavior than cyclists. Do you see them doing things that are unsavory? Yes. Are the people who are involved in this stuff incredibly aware and critical of poor cycling? Absolutely. I don't think you'll find anybody who's more accountable to each other for their behavior than cyclists. I would encourage you to look at what an organization like Transportation Alternatives is doing, and that promoting these bike lanes, promoting all of this stuff, is just a piece of a puzzle that is coming together to make the street safer for everybody, especially pedestrians. It comes with bus lanes, safer, you know, bus stops, safer pedestrian crossings, for all the things you see that are irritating you. The numbers show that the bike lanes are keeping people safer, including pedestrians, by shortening crossing distances, by putting the cars where they're less likely to hurt somebody. And Charles, you want to add anything?
You seem, you being the listener, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, convinced that cycling and cyclists make you as a pedestrian less safe. And the facts or the numbers don't bear that out. I have a lot of skin in this game. Not only am I a statistician, you know, professionally, I was the first person back in the in 1987 and 88 when I was running Transportation Alternatives to pry from the NYPD, which at that point was a lot more accessible to the public in terms of information. I was able to get from them every month the data on the number of crashes and the number of fatalities of all three types of collisions, let's say, between drivers and pedestrians, between drivers and bicyclists, and between between cyclists and pedestrians. And what we found, and this was startling even to me, because at that time there was this tremendous moral panic over cyclists, over the idea that cyclists were going to be mowing down every pedestrian in the city. That's what led Mayor Koch to outrageously and spinelessly propose that ill-fated Midtown bicycle ban in the summer of 1987. What we found then pretty much holds now, that maybe once a year or even a little bit less than once a year, a pedestrian somewhere in New York City is killed in a crash with a cyclist. And it's terrible when that happens. And everybody in the cycling community feels genuinely upset and grievous or aggrieved by that. And at the same time, between 100 and 200 pedestrians are being killed every year by drivers. And it's so many, and when you throw in the serious injuries, the disproportion gets even worse, that it far outweighs the fact that, yes, there are more drivers. So, you know, if we normalize the data by the amount of people driving versus the amount of people cycling, it still holds that every driver who becomes a cyclist, that means that the city is safer because there are fewer people riding. Okay, you know, you show me your data. I published a booklet in 1999, and I can give you the New York Times article on it, or you can look it up. It's by Andy Newman, March 20th, 1999, an article about our booklet at a group that I helped found called Right of Way. We are the people who spray painted the body images of dead pedestrians on sidewalks, yes, sidewalks, and in the pavement of every borough at the place where they had been run over and killed by drivers. And what our statistical study showed, called Killed by Automobile, Google it, you'll find it. What it showed is that, A, in the vast majority of pedestrian fatalities at the hands of drivers, it's the drivers who are much more at fault than the pedestrian. You hopefully will agree with that. But second and more important is that pedestrian fatalities involving motor vehicles outweigh those involving cyclists by 100 to 300 to 1. And our data are out there. Google Killed by Automobile. If you've got counter data, you know, not just your anecdote or your perception, but if you've got data, show it. And you know what? You don't, because it's not there.
Linda, I want to thank you for your call, and I do. I want to thank you. We're going to go to another call in a moment. I do want to thank you for bringing up something really, really important, which is you mentioned Central Park as a place where you're experiencing these conflicts. I agree with you, Central Park. This has been in the news a lot lately. This is a subject definitely for another show. Central Park is, there's a lot of user conflict in Central Park. And I think you and I and everybody would agree that Central Park and places like that do need to be managed better. These problems need to be addressed. And so it's a really interesting subject. And I think it's telling you're experiencing this in Central Park, because this is a place where the cars have been, to a large extent, factored out. So you do have other kinds of conflicts. But thank you so much for that call. I'm going to take another call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Russell. I'm up in White Plains, Evan.
Hi, Russell.
All right. I've got a tip for that woman. Keep the dog on a short leash. You're better off. But it disturbed me when you said that it's a psychological barrier. That sounded like whistling past the graveyard. There's not a psychological barrier. There are criminals out on the road with cars, and you're never going to get enough people bicycling, because smart people are not going to go on the roads with cars intimidating. I stopped bicycling because I thought my wife would stop. She didn't, and I had to take the bicycle away, okay? 10% of these drivers are criminals, okay? And anyone who drives a car can see the criminals out there. There's 10% of these drivers are driving like criminals, okay? And a lot of them are off-duty police and firemen in private cars, okay? There's plenty of room in jail for these people. My neighbor got run over by some idiot, and the guy got his head popped like a grape on 98th and West End, okay? And she's never going to see the inside of a jail, okay? I like that, putting body marks on the street. We ought to go back to that. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, the reason I say it's a psychological barrier is not because the potential for tragedy and carnage is there. Of course it is. I say it's a psychological barrier because we have a massive death toll in this country. Drivers and passengers of motor vehicles die in epidemic numbers. We don't, by and large, have a psychological barrier about getting inside a car, even though as a driver, as a passenger in a car, you're also facing a tremendous amount of risk. You assess the risk you face on a bicycle differently than you assess the risk you face in a car. Would you agree with that, Charles?
Sorry, even I distracted myself because I was thinking about this caller's friend who was killed at 98th and West End.
Yeah,
and so, I wanted to just express sympathy and solidarity over that. And then to add that that was just a block or two away from the corner on West End Avenue where in, I guess it was early 2014, 9-year-old Cooper Stock was run over and killed while crossing the street in the crosswalk, holding his mother's hand, killed by a left-turning cab driver. And, you know, again, we don't want to be doing things by anecdote, but there is so much pain and suffering and loss out there in our car culture city. And the caller from White Plains perhaps will take heart to know that City Council member Brad Lander has proposed a bill, I don't know the status of it, that would remove, or actually, I don't know if it would remove the license. It would take drivers who have been hit with, I think it's 5 speeding or red light summonses, you know, demonstrably dangerous behavior, because there is now beginning to be a public database on this thanks to red light camera provisions and the speed cam law, you know, that was recently beefed up for the city of New York. So there's beginning to be a database that can identify the kinds of miscreant drivers that the caller from White Plains was just alluding to. And the Brad Lander bill would require such drivers who have these multiple summonses to enter a kind of, there's a name for it, I can't quite get, it's not restitution, it's not reconciliation, but some kind of remediation program where they are somehow confronted with and made to acknowledge the deadly or potentially deadly consequences of their behavior. This hasn't been tried yet. The bill is just a bill. It's not a law. But this is the kind of thing, because, you know, let's face it, not just us on WBAI, but many of us in the society, we don't want to be putting any more people in jail. And the solution ultimately does not lie in adding repression to yet another aspect of human activity in our prison besotted society. We've got to find a new way of dealing with dangerous driving, and perhaps the Brad Lander bill does point to a partial solution.
Right, intervening with drivers before they have a chance to kill somebody.
Yes.
So we're going to take one more call. 212-20 Oh, sorry, we don't need the number because we have one more call we're going to take. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello, that's me.
Hello, yeah, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Uli, Bergen County, New Jersey.
Hi.
First, I'd like to know, are there laws on the book what a bicycle rider is not allowed to do in New York City?
There are many laws about traffic. There are many traffic laws in New York City. All of it's
but
there.
I mean, just applying to bike riders, I mean.
The law, yes, there are specific, there are laws that are applied to bicycle riders as road users, yes.
And how do they, how do bicycle riders find out about, I mean, it looks like most
people. Well, that
people
is a good question.
Actually, can I sort of jump in here?
Yeah, please.
And hi, Bergen County. I'm in your domain frequently. I'm one of those guys who on a weekend puts on Lycra and bikes over the George Washington Bridge and up to, you know, Piermont or Nyack, and I enjoy it very much. I suspect that cyclists are more understanding or knowledgeable about laws that apply to them or us than drivers are about laws that apply to them. You could probably count, you know, maybe 1 in 100 or fewer drivers know about New York State DMV Section 1214, which prohibits throwing open the door of a car or truck into the path of anybody else on the road, whether it's a driver or a bicyclist. We call that dooring, and it can often be fatal. That they don't know, drivers, about Sections 1222 and 1229 that prohibit tailgating or aggressive overtaking or passing. All that drivers seem to know about, if they even adhere to it, is, you know, red lights, maybe some of them speeding, some of them signaling. And so if there's going to be more education and, you know, who's against that, let's start with the drivers.
All right. So this has been Bike Snob. My guest has been Charles Komanov. I'm Eben Weiss. Thank you very much for listening. Ride safe out there.
Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
Hi, this is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5.